Have you been sitting on the fence about signing up for the beta reader matchup, or have you signed up before but haven't yet found your writing soulmates? The next matchup is the last one for the summer, so don't snooze on it. Get matched up with those writing in a similar genre and or time zone so they can critique your work as you critique theirs. Your manuscript doesn't have to be complete to sign up for this 3,000-word evaluation. This particular matchup will be open to registrations from now until the 1st of June, with the matchup emails going out on the 2nd of June. For more information and to register, go to biancamaray.com and go to the Beta Reader matchup page.
What's up, everyone? This is Cece. So I recently grabbed lunch with an acquiring editor from HarperCollins who told me that the number of submissions she's been getting has nearly doubled. And I wasn't surprised at all because every agent and editor I know has been talking about how the volume of submission keeps increasing. So personally, that is a wonderful thing because it's more reading for me, but it also means I have more chances of matching with authors. I consider it a privilege to review queries on Books with Hooks and, of course, in my submissions inbox. But at the same time, I talk to writers who tell me that they wish agents would read more than a few pages because, and I quote, "my story gets better in chapter two." I have to be honest, this kills me. It's like me wanting chocolate chip cookies to have the nutritional value of kale. It's just not realistic. Like it or not, no agent, no acquiring editor is going to stick around to see if a submission gets better. It's not because we're mean, it's because we get dozens and dozens every day. I know it's harsh, but ambitious writers embrace harsh realities. So here it goes. It's your job to make your opening pages irresistible, to make agents crave it, to make agents want to read more. That's why I'm so excited about my upcoming course, Starting It Right, How to Begin Your Story in the Best Place and in the Best Way. I created this course after studying hundreds of books. I've mapped out elements that are present in the beginning of all successful novels and memoirs. And I've designed checklists, actual checklists, that you can use to ensure that your story's beginning is seducing your reader. We'll cover how to write a great first line, different types of beginnings, and how you can choose the best one, the best place to start, and the best way to start. Yes, these are totally different things. When it makes sense to add a prologue and when it doesn't, how to frame your inciting incident in an appealing way, how to balance exposition and mystery, how to include context but not weigh it down with too much backstory, and what to do if your story has more than one POV or timeline. Most of all, I'm going to show you how to make readers want to turn to chapter two. Join me for this multi-day course designed to help you break through the noise. You'll leave with a clear, actionable breakdown of exactly what goes into a terrific beginning. If you've already signed up, come prepared to take lots of notes. We're talking hundreds of slides with real-world examples and specific techniques, plus a super fun surprise that I can't wait to share. I hope to see you there.
There and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm best-selling author Bianca Murray, and I'm joined by Cece Lira of Wendy Sherman Associates and Carly Waters of PS Literary. Hi everyone, welcome back to another Books with Hooks segment. As per usual, we're diving straight in. Cece, will you kick us off, please?
Let's do it. Dear Cece, I am delighted to submit to you my satirical body horror debut mouthpiece, complete at 65,000 words, based on your interest in acquiring fiction with morally ambiguous protagonists. Mouthpiece is like the weird girl lit fic love child of R.F. Kuang's Yellowface and Rachel Yoder's Night Bitch, but with Sheena Patel's I'm a Fan as an older sister. Blanca Moore, quickly nearing 30 and stuck in a soul-sucking job to afford her even more soul-crushing debt, wants to be an influencer. When her long-term boyfriend dumps her for not paying enough attention to him, I guess the male loneliness epidemic is real, She's determined to enter her 30s as a new woman. Being a hashtag certified corporate girly, she creates a detailed plan to achieve all of her goals. Start dating again, get an Ozempic, and hold the party of the year, a funeral for her 20s. But when a mysteriously gifted skincare product shows up on her doorstep that promises to transform her life, she jumps at the opportunity. Desperate for beauty, validation, and digital relevance, she applies it with little suspicion, only to discover that it causes a small, insatiable mouth to grow on her stomach. As her online infamy grows, so does her hunger. And the only thing that will solve it and complete her transformation, the flesh of a man. With her lavishly themed birthday party looming, which she swears will go viral, Blanca must confront the monstrous version of herself she's created before it consumes everything she has left. I earned a Bachelor of Arts in English and a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, which taught me how to turn my weird ideas into delectable stories. I'm a nearly 30-year-old Latina woman, right, navigating spaces entirely made for men while trying to balance the unobtainable beauty standards that society continues to impose. I wrote Mouthpiece as a way to give voice to the perils of aging and a desire to understand where the line between validation and value diverges. My internalized rage, mainly at the patriarchy, lives on these pages. I look forward to hearing from you. Best regards, Marisol.
Thank you, Cece. I continue to hear horror as whore. And this is, but I'm more inclined to pick up the book if I hear whore than horror. So there we are, you know.
There you go. It's a marketing strategy.
I dig it. So I want to ask you both, because I don't know if this is a generational thing and because I'm 50, but, and I know it's on Instagram, the girly thing, the hashtag girly or people gang high girlies, but it drives me insane. Being called a girly, like, actually makes me not want to buy any product, pick up anything. Is this because I'm old and grumpy? Carly and Cece, how do you guys feel about it?
I mean, it's the infantilization of women to make them think that they need the thing, even though they don't need the thing. And it's like, well, if you want to be young, then you're a girly. So it's like, you're just not being tricked. I think this is a good thing. Bianca will not be tricked.
Bianca will not be tricked.
Is it that, or are we taking back the word to empower ourselves, like bitch? Because I call all my, I'll sit down at lunch with all my friends, be like, hello, bitches. So I don't know if it's that or if it is the infantilization. So I need younger women to explain it to me.
I think it depends on the audience. Like, okay. I definitely think that the evil powers that be are trying to infantilize women. But I also believe that, like anything, language is a fluid thing, living thing. And there are situations where you can do it to empower yourself. But it doesn't work on every audience, and nor should it. Nothing that is interesting is universally liked. Like, that's just
marketing
not how it
doesn't
works,
mean you know? Just blanket market to half the population, yeah. Also. Like, it is a subset, which you will not be fooled.
Yeah. No. I will not be fooled, people. So, Cece, what did you think of the query? How many words were in there? Let's go.
So, 360 words started off really strong, you know, because we got comps, we have a strong title. The word count is on the shorter side, but at the same time, people have declining attention spans, and I quite like a pacey novel, so I'm okay with that. Yeah, I understand why she would submit this to me. It's really great. I also really like the first plot paragraph because it establishes the protagonist's place in the world. Like, I know what Blanca Moore is up against. It's very important in a query letter to establish your protagonist's place in the world at the beginning of the story, not the place in the planet Earth world, their world. Right. So I understand, like, her grievances, her socio-emotional framework based on that paragraph alone. So great job. Then we get to, like, the change, and storytelling is about change. Right. We get to, like, what plot happens. And I understand the inciting incident very well. She gets gifted this mysterious skincare product, and the product transforms her. What I'm not clear on, and I really want to be, is what this transformation entails. A mouth to grow on her stomach. Does this mean, like, there's a mouth where her belly button's supposed to be, like a mouth that is visible? Or does this mean, like, a mouth inside the stomach? And if so, isn't that what the stomach essentially is? Because, like, all the food.
I'm picturing, like, when she lifts up her sister, like, if she was in a bikini, seeing a mouth is what I'm picturing.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought, too. She does say on, but, like, I'm not entirely sure. And then, like, what's the upside of that? Because it is kind of weird and gross.
which I know is the point here, to have a mouth on your stomach. My question is, like, what's the upside? Because I know she says desperate for beauty, validation, and digital relevance, but I'm not getting like what she's getting out of this. This makes me think of The Substance with Demi Moore. I think everyone's going to think of The Substance, right? Like, I think that's the natural association. And I have issues with that movie because of a major plot hole that no one talks about. I'm the only one who cares. On the trailer for that movie, the promise is clear. Like, she gets to spend 1 week as a younger woman. What is the trade-off here? Like, I get that her online infamy grows, but it's infamy. And then there's a reference to the only thing that will complete her transformation is the flesh of a man. Like, complete her transformation into what? Like, is it to get rid of the visible mouth? Is it to become, I guess, more attractive? But I just want a lot of specificity with the transformation, because this is a story that hinges on me understanding why someone would pay a cost, a very specific cost, to achieve a very specific gain. And I suspect that the storyteller is holding back on telling us the specifics because she doesn't want spoilers. And I empathize. But at the same time, everything before the climax is fair game. And I would just urge you to be more specific, because remember, agents review queries in batches. We're looking at 50 queries at the same time or more. And we get a lot of stories where it's like, oh, there's this transformation that's going to take place, but the cost is really high. What about your story makes it unique and special? And it's your job to highlight that in the query letter. I will say that the idea of a funeral for your 20s is very cool. I wish I had known about that, because I totally would have thrown one. That sounds awesome. It's dark and weird, and I like that. I also really like the author bio. She has internalized rage, and so do I. Of all the seven sins, wrath, for sure, my number one, even more than gluttony, and I eat a lot. So yeah, I feel you, author. I also have rage, and I appreciate you mentioning that in the query letter.
Thank you, Cece. I too love weird parties. A friend of mine, when she called off her engagement in her 20s, had a what the fuck was I thinking party.
Oh, love
which
that.
Which was amazing. The only problem was there were like 15 women there, and I chose that night to introduce Stephen to all of these really angry women. But it was a good test, because he passed
it.
It's
a man-hating party, but you know, everybody's welcome.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Man-hating, man-bashing, and he walked out of there bruised, but he was fine. So that's good. Okay, Carly, handing it across to you.
Okay, here we go. A couple things. So I think I actually have something kind of controversial to say, and we don't actually usually have a lot of overlap between Shooting the Shit and this podcast, our Books with Hooks podcast, but I want to kind of bridge the gap a little bit here. So I have, and feel free to disagree with me, but I posit a theory that query letters are going to get better and better and better over time because of the thing we talk about on Shooting the Shit all the time, which is AI. Do you guys think that we are going to make ourselves obsolete? Like, we've been giving so much advice about query letters over the years. So much information is out there about how to write a great query letter. The query letters we have today are quite strong. Obviously, we always have notes, but like, do you guys think we have like outsmarted ourselves into obsolescence? Do you guys think we're still going to have a podcaster job? What do you think our role is going to be in query letters?
I think if all query letters are great, first and foremost, I'll be very happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll mean we will be out of a job. But can you imagine going through the slush pile and having all the query letters to be like absolutely fantastic? I want that life. So yay if that happens. Do I think it's going to happen? No, I don't.
No? Interesting.
Because again, I am not someone with a lot of AI proficiency. So perhaps this is coming from a place of ignorance. But I personally feel that what AI does is it regurgitates generic language in a right. way that it gives out what I call empty impact lines.
Right.
A lot.
Yes. Yes.
Like
it's
a
like
lot.
It sounds
like
dramatic, you, and then you're like, what does this even mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Totally.
Like, we'll you can't
like,
unpack
vague,
it. There's
that's
no
vague,
meat.
That's vague.
Exactly. And for 2 seconds, if you're reading it, you go, oh, impactful. But then you go, actually, not really. And I mean, agents have a really good BS barometer.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We can spot empty impact lines better than the average person. But also B, like when you're reading 50 query letters, the impact lines just lose their, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like meat and substance is the most important thing in a query letter. It can't be smoke and mirrors. And I think AI does smoke and mirrors. But hey, I could be wrong, you know.
Meat is important in your query letter because of the stomach mouth.
The stomach needs to be fed. We need to be fed great query letters. So I think I'm not advocating. I want to be very clear. I am not advocating for people to be writing their query letters with AI. I would be hard pressed to know for sure whether there are people that listening to this that are not doing that, you know, either way. So if anybody is ever going to use AI to do this, know that the empty impact statements are what is going to sewer you, because you could be thinking, oh, I asked AI to write me a query letter like, you know, this best-selling novel. But what it's going to do is regurgitate things, be unclear, and sound great and not actually get to the heart of your project. So do not put your material into AI. All of you that are rolling your eyes at me while you're driving your car, eyes on the road, because we need you to write the best query letter that you can. And we will still be here to help you guys with your query letters, because that is our job. Okay, back to this query letter at hand. In the second line, you say, based on your interest in acquiring fiction. Just a reminder that agents don't acquire. Like, we sign clients, and acquiring is a very specific word. Acquiring is what editors do when they buy the book for the publisher. So just FYI, acquiring is a really tricky word here. So don't use
acquiring. Okay. I just need to interrupt. A lot of agents put on their wish list, I'm looking to acquire blah, blah, blah. Like, she's probably just copying what like a billion agents do. Just say.
Okay. Listen, we're disagreeing. We're disagreeing on this.
Didn't even get the cool thing.
Fight.
No, but see, here's the thing. When I first heard it, when I started agenting, I was like, agents don't acquire. And then I noticed everyone doing it. And I'm like, you know what? Acquire for the list. Like, I just got over it, because everyone does it. And I'm just saying that the author is probably like imitating or emulating what she sees.
Okay. Another reason why this podcast will never die is because we have so many opinions and we do not speak for everybody. I will just flag that as a yellow flag. Let's go with a yellow flag there for the term acquiring fiction. All right. There are way too many comps. 4 comps is a lot of comps. That's a lot of comps. So I think we need to kind of narrow that down a little bit. And I think the substance, like Cece talked about, is an obvious omission here.
Carly, can I just jump in without making you lose your train of thought? Something that I'm finding fascinating now that we've started the Meet Your Dream Agent segment in our Tuesday Substack, where we interview different agents so that our listeners can get to know them better, is how many of them say that when they tap out of a query letter is because of bad comps. Comps that don't fit with the genre, etc. And I was honestly thinking it would be something else, like the plot paragraph. And so many of them are saying, these comps don't make any sense. I'm tapping out. So it shows you how important the comps are all around.
I feel like that's the thing that we have. I mean, there's a lot of things we've like tried to like hammer home with our audience over the years. I hope our long-term listeners know how strongly we feel about comps for all of those reasons. It's so important in your understanding of your place within the larger marketplace, where you want to go, what your goals are, how you see things. Cece, why are you rolling your eyes at me?
It's not at you. I'm thinking of something really bad I want to say, but I'm like, don't say it.
Okay. Say well, when we're off say recording, when we're it. Done recording, we can gossip.
No, keep I'm going to say it. You know what I think? Okay. Whenever an agent says that, whenever an agent says, oh, I tap out because of the comps, I go, do it so I can take the project for me. Because I have signed people with terrible comps. So what? The story was great. I will find the damn comps. Like, I will do it. I'm not, again, is it smarter for the author to find it? Yes. But I'm sorry, agents who are doing this. You're missing out. You're missing out. You are. I get it. Your time is limited. I'm busy too. But, you know, finding comps is really hard. And as long as the story is great, I will find them. I know how to research.
Yeah. I think this is also a classic case of different agents at different point in their careers are going to pay attention to different things.
Very true.
And when you are building your list, you're more likely to overlook things like that because you have the brain power and the time and the energy to be like, you know, I can sort through this to figure it out. And the more established an agent is, the more likely they are to skim, especially through those parts of it. So all good points. Okay, can I please make it to the second paragraph, please?
Oh, Carly's getting pissy. Okay, go, Carly.
Okay. One thing we haven't talked about with this submission is this idea of satire, because like, I am a bit confused on what specifically is satirical about it. It's very obvious, I think, what this metaphor is for female ambition, for female rage, for the ways that our bodies are policed, the way that our bodies are put on show. Like, it is very clear to me what we're kind of working with. So I don't know what the satire is. I mean, maybe I'm being a bit dense here, but like, what is satirical about this if it's so like straight on that you like this, I don't know, this allegory? Like, I don't know what to call it, like the body horror part, right? Of the mouth on the stomach. So what about it is satire? Is it literary? The cops are very literary. The tone is very playful influencer language that feels more commercial. I'm not really sure that it is satire, to be perfectly honest with you. So I think I need to be convinced that this is satire. So I feel very strongly like that's the piece of this that's missing for me. I think that the author bio is great. And thank you for letting me make it to the end of the query letter.
Say something else, Carly, so I can interrupt you. Okay. Oh, she just flashed us the big guns. If you're not watching on YouTube, this is the moment you need to go and watch what she did. Okay, Cece, I'm handing it across to you now. Tell us what's in the pages.
We drank silly tea today, all of us. We all got a special delivery. Okay, so we have chapter one, and then we have a stamp, 30 days. Dun, dun, dun. We begin with interiority. The protagonist is in her 30s with nearly $100,000 in debt. And she's thinking about how, you know, her boyfriend does everything around the house and the domestic stuff. And that means they're a modern couple, that he likes doing it. She doesn't. And that he's very needy. Like, he's very frustrating and needy. And her boyfriend's like, hey, can we talk? And she's like, not now. And he's like, can we talk about us? And she's like, oh my gosh, this is so annoying. She keeps trying to post and edit a video that so she can post and have views. But we know that, you know, she's not doing a really good job with her views. And her boyfriend keeps talking and she's not paying attention to him. And then she does start paying attention to him. And he says, yeah, well, I think we need to, you know, save money. We've been spending too much money. It's, you know, I do it, you do it. Let's talk about it. And she's thinking to herself, oh my God, not this again. Like, they've had this conversation again a million times. And she's like, look, I don't want to do that. I don't want to live a small life. And yeah, maybe one day we'll start a family. Kids are good content. But, you know, I really want a big, thriving, fun life. So yeah, that's essentially what happens.
Okay, so take us through your thoughts on that.
Okay, I'll start with the big picture thought. I don't think it's starting in the right place. I think that this author is falling prey to a very common mistake, which is, my job is to give a before snapshot. You know, before the inciting incident, what does my protagonist's life look like? And so she picked a typical day. I understand the impulse, and it is true that we need to know what your protagonist's life looks like before the big change. This is true. But that doesn't mean that any scene before the change fits the bill and delivers the promise that we need. And in this case, it, in my opinion, doesn't. Because it's a little too mundane, a little too on the nose. Literally the first two paragraphs, and you guys know I'm a fan of interiority, but it's essentially her going through her situation. You know, like, she's in debt. She has nothing to show for her life. Jordan is her stable boyfriend. She makes a lot more money than he does. She loves to say that whenever they fight. He does more things around the house. They're a modern couple. She needs time to post on TikTok. She aims to post 3 times a day, even though her views aren't getting, like, this is all like two paragraphs.
But Cece, do you actually think this is interiority? Like, you just called this interiority. I actually don't think this is very interior.
So my definition of interiority, and this is where it depends on the jargon you use, is access to your protagonist's psyche as they process information in an interesting way. So anything that's not neutral, like, you walk into a room and you go, there is a green couch, that's not interiority. A CCTV camera could capture that. But if you say it's an ugly green couch, that's an opinion. Therefore, it's interiority. So I agree with you that a lot of people wouldn't consider this. It's like a CC thing. It's exposition, but interiority can be exposition. Interiority can also not be. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I don't know if you've answered my question. Do you think this is doing the job of what you consider interiority?
The interesting part, no. It is access to her psyche as she processes information.
Yeah.
But it's not doing the interesting part. So, you know, no in that sense, but yes in the sense of what she's trying to do, because I believe that the storyteller thinks this is interesting, right? So I think I'm addressing her intent and her effort. I know that if you're writing a story where the whole plot hinges on a woman being unhappy in her life, being sucked in by the internet world of social media and attention and views and likes and wanting to be an influencer because that's her only chance of a better life. And then she goes really far to get that. I understand that it might be tempting to be like, I'm going to start with the paragraph about how her life needs to improve, but it's too on the nose for my taste. There are people who like this a little bit more on the nose fiction. It is not for me. Like the, as soon as I read the first two paragraphs, I was like, okay, the writing isn't for me. It's one of the reasons why all we really need to see is a few pages to know whether we might be or might not be a good fit for a client. It's all the writing, right? So I did think that there were some really clever things. Like, for example, instead of having her think about what she looks like, you know, the color of her hair, her eyes, she is looking at herself through the video that she just filmed, but she uses filters. And she talks about how the filters make her look so much better, that instead of her mousy hair, her hair looks XYZ. And that is a very clever way to not only weave in the story's themes in a way that's more subtle, but also to give me description of the protagonist. So I actually think the author here has a lot of potential. I don't think it's a type of story that's for me. Like, again, it's just like just the kind of writing that it is. It isn't a CC, but that's like a personal thing. And I think that it's not starting in the right place. So I would encourage you to find a more interesting scene. Like it needs to be a scene where the disruption is very juicy and there's a shift in power dynamics, a shift in story forward expectations. And I'm not seeing that here.
Thank you, Cece. Sometimes it's just a few pages later. So for authors, a lot of the time, you know I start somewhere that I think is the beginning and it's not. It's generally further along or way before. But yeah, read the rest of your pages and see if there is a scene that'll tick all those boxes for Cece. It doesn't necessarily mean a rewrite. Okay, Carly, moving on to you.
All right. Longtime listeners of this show know my feelings around influencer characters. This is an example of something that I feel is just going to date itself. And that's where I really struggle as an agent, because I have to think, okay, of course, when I would sign a project, I would hope to sell it quickly. There's times where I don't sell a book quickly. I just made a reel not too long ago talking about how I signed a book in 2017 and it didn't come out until 2026. Like there are projects that just take a lot of time to sell. And that is one of the reasons why I can't take on many, if any, influencer projects. Because yes, I do believe that this version of the internet where there is social media is going to be around for a very long time. It changes constantly. Like I think we can argue quarterly that the algorithm changes in ways that is unrecognizable. And we spend so many words in these opening pages talking about, I have to post within this window because this is when my audience is online. Can we really say in 2 years that the algorithm is going to be used in that way? I don't think that we can. And this could just be an example of this book is not starting in the right place and I'm picking on something specific to this character. And, you know, obviously you can fault me for that, but that's my job. You know, that's the way that I'm going to read this. This is my entry point into this story. And I definitely, definitely struggle with that. The other thing I struggle with is, if she is trying to take her job really seriously, then why is this an 11th hour project when her partner is trying to talk to her? She's like, I have to do this before my audience is no longer online. If you were a real kind of committed influencer, you'd be like, I've planned my content calendar for the next 3 weeks. So like, I know what I'm doing at any given point. So why would we be doing an 11th hour creative project? I don't understand that. And I'm still not sure where the satire is. I do not see it on the page. And it could be that, again, it's coming. It's something like, again, it's horror. So maybe we're like building to the satire as we build to the horror. All of that could be true. In my mind, that is something that sets this apart and could really set this project apart. And so if that is really specific to your project, as promised in the query letter, I would really try to find a way to layer in the satire much earlier.
Thank you, Carly. I just want to give a shout out to one of my favorite influencer books, and it's a Canadian author, Lian Zhang, who wrote Julie Chan is Dead. So for this author to maybe check it out, or anybody who's writing about influencers, that was a really great book. Okay, before we move on to Carly's query, first a note from our sponsors.
Travel season is almost here. I've got my packing list and I'm ready to go. We just got back from a family weekend trip to Quebec to work on our French. Up next, a summer trip to Germany to introduce the kids to the Alps and hear a new language. Plus, our 10th anniversary trip to Italy later this year. I love hearing my Italian husband speak Italian. If you have travel coming up, join me in using Rosetta Stone to learn some local languages. There's something about summer that just feels like travel. Shake off the winter and get ready to move. Learning a new language is the perfect way to channel that momentum into a skill that opens up the world. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive methods help you naturally absorb your new language without memorizing random vocabulary lists or relying on translations. Instead, you learn by connecting words, visuals, and meaning in context, the way language is meant to be learned. Working in the publishing business means my days are often packed with meetings and manuscripts, but I love how simple these lessons are to fit into my schedule. Whether I have 5 minutes between emails or an hour on the weekend, I can access my lessons from my desktop or the mobile app. Since we're heading to Italy, I've been using my true accent, which gives me real-time feedback on my pronunciation so I can sound more natural when we're visiting local vineyards. It's like having a personal coach to help me communicate with confidence. Rosetta Stone offers 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, German, and Japanese, so you can find one that fits your next big adventure. Ready to start learning a new language this summer? Visit rosettastone.com/today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/today now and begin your language learning journey. Between school drop-offs, hitting the gym, and diving into client calls, I don't have the mental bandwidth for a wardrobe crisis. I need pieces that feel effortless and comfortable but still look sharp. Quince has been my go-to for that, especially now as I'm counting down the days until the summer finally hits. Their elevated fabrics make me feel put together without any overthinking. It's that rare combo when I know I look good, whether I'm chasing around my kids or sitting down for a meeting. Right now, I'm in the thick of balancing client work and triathlon training sessions, so my spring wardrobe has to do double duty. Quince makes that transition really easy with pieces that feel as good as they look. They're using high-end quality, 100% European linen, organic cotton, and ultra-soft denim, which is exactly what I need when I want to look sharp without feeling restricted. I'm a huge fan of wear on repeat items, and Quince's linen collection is the gold standard for that. Their lightweight pants, dresses, and tops just start at $30. They're breathable and effortless, which is a lifesaver. Whether I'm recording an episode, headed to the gym, or just keeping up with my kids, it's an instant outfit that makes it getting out the door so much easier. If you're like me and appreciate a smart financial move, you're going to love their model because everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar luxury brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're actually paying for the quality and craftsmanship rather than a brand markup. It's a high-end style that actually makes sense for a busy budget. I'm so eager for the weather to warm up so I can get my linen shorts on. Machine washable linen I can wear every day. Sign me up. I bought them in black, so they'll look classy with a black slide sandal, or I can pop on some running shoes and chase after the kids to the park. And the price, I had to double check because I was shocked at how affordable they are. I can't wait to wear my black linen shorts. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/tisnatya for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/tisnatya for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/tisnatya.
Okay, Carly, handing it across to you.
Dear Carly, based on your interest in stories about motherhood, family, and ambition, I'm thrilled to share with you Nothing Close to Perfect, a 95,000-word multi-POV contemporary fiction about what happens when a long-running affair unravels the finely orchestrated lives of an ascending political family. It's the escalating impact of family secrets and lies as Andrea Dunlop's Women Are the Fiercest Creature meets the challenges of midlife marriage and motherhood in Claire Lombardo's Same As It Ever Was. Melody Sullivan has spent the past 25 years trying to build something close to a perfect life. She's married to Billy, her college sweetheart, and a U.S. senator, planning the wedding of the year for her daughter and trying to keep her son focused on college and out of trouble. But when a news story meant to soft launch Billy's presidential campaign instead reveals his long-term affair with Iris, a struggling diner waitress, the perfect family facade is shattered beyond repair. As Melody and her adult children flee to the family beach house on an exclusive island, Iris deals with the fallout, trapped with Billy's newborn daughter in her DC apartment. In the months that follow, as Melody considers a future without the man she's depended on and develops complicated feelings for the handyman working next door, her daughter struggles with giving up her own ambitions for her fiancé's, while her son drops out of his elite college to work at a bar. As Billy tries to make amends to save his floundering campaign and his family while also continuing his relationship with Iris, a second news story breaks. The life Melody has created has been built on an unforgivable lie. The consequences will both be devastating and ultimately freeing as Melody, her children, and Iris must decide what and who they're willing to give up for something better than a perfect life. I work in higher education in North Carolina, where the story is set and where Senator John Edwards torpedoed his political career and his family over an affair. While not a retelling, Nothing Close to Perfect is inspired by those events, plus the many other stories of powerful men behaving poorly, and would be my debut novel. I've enclosed the first 5 pages below and look forward to your feedback. Sincerely, Allison McWilliams.
Awesome, Carly. Okay, how many words was that and what was your take on it?
There was a postscript sharing their love for the pod and also letting me know that it was 381 words. All right, so here we go. I don't love this title. I think it's a little bit forgettable. I would love to see what your other options are. When I request full manuscripts as part of my querying process, I always ask for a list of alternate titles because it makes me so curious about other ways that authors see their own work, other title ideas that they have. And I usually end up almost always picking one off the list that wasn't their lead title. So yeah, I find this a little bit forgettable. So I would look at this one again. Okay, back now to the comps here. So as much as I love that you're picking Women Are the Fiercest Creatures, and I don't think that it's necessarily the wrong comp here, comps that I think are a bit more fine-tuned, let's just say, would be Scandal. Why wouldn't we comp to Scandal? I mean, it's not the most up-to-date show, but everybody loves Scandal. And so I would say Scandal is an option. Another one, I was trying to think, I've read so many Ellen Hildebrand books, and I was trying to figure out before we came online, like, what was the Ellen Hildebrand book about a torpedoed political career? I'm pretty sure it's 28 Summers. Fact check me on that, because again, I did a really quick Google before we came online. But the Eldon Hildebrand book, 28 Summers, because I'm pretty sure that, Cece, did you read that one, 28 Summers? Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I do, yeah. I don't remember if it's that one, though, because the thing about Ellen's books is that I remember the story, but I never remember the title. I just go, Ellen's book.
Yeah.
It's what happens with name linkage. It's like Emily Henry. Like, I don't remember which one it was that I read.
But yeah, I know. Especially when they've read a book a year.
One where we see like the same time next year?
Yes, it's the same time next year with the, and then he rises in his political campaign and she stays on the island.
Yes.
Sorry, I'm ruining this. It's a great book.
No, this doesn't ruin anything. It's okay. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm pretty sure it's that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would do Scandal meets 28 Summers if it was me as an example. I'm not saying you have to do that. You can, again, pick another book. I haven't read Claire Lombardo's latest, so I can't speak to that one. And that could be a great comp. Bianca, you read Claire Lombardo's latest.
Sacrilege. Everyone should read Claire Lombardo.
Well, I read the first book.
Even Reese Witherspoon chose her first book, I think, like 3 years after it came out. Yes. So, sacrilege.
But this is the second one, right? Same as it ever was.
Same as it ever
one.
Was, yeah. Second one.
Okay, so I haven't read the second book. All this to say, I think the comps could use a teensy bit of work, but obviously thank you for choosing a great client book. Women Are the Fiercest Creatures is a great book about men being taken down, so yay for that. Okay, this is a very juicy plot. Like, I love this. I'm very interested in this book, and I would, you know, we'll get to the pages later. I totally would request this. It would definitely be something that would be on my radar to get to my Kindle as fast as I could and read it. The thing that I think where it breaks down, you know, if there's some room for improvement here, was the life Melody had created had been built on an unforgivable lie. That's too vague. This could be anything from her upbringing isn't as blue blood as they thought, to she had an affair, one of the children isn't Billy's. Like, our minds just going in so many places. I think we have to nail this down, especially because you are so good at telling us all the juicy stuff earlier on, like the daughter struggling to give up her ambitions for a fiance, the son dropping out of college. So the fact that you drop all of that information, you don't tell us what Melody's big lie is, I'm a little bit confused by that. Obviously, it probably has something to do with the climax and you're trying to save us. I wonder, this is an example, I always say this, but I love when authors are on the show because I get to ask them what the thing is, because I do want to know what this thing is. But other than that, it's really strong. I would totally request the page.
Awesome, Carly. So that's a good sign. It's doing its job. Cece, would you request the pages? What are your thoughts?
I would. I really liked the query letter. It was really strong. The author did an amazing job by putting the hook really up top. You know, what happens when a long-running affair unravels the finely orchestrated lives of an ascending political family? It gives you that ensemble cast feel that a multi-POV novel needs. It is really, really smart. Yeah, it's an excellent query letter. Excellent.
Wonderful. Okay, well, we don't have more to say on that, so we're going to move on to the pages. Carly, what's in them?
All right. So we have a prologue that is not a prologue, but we know it's a prologue. We start with Iris, who is the other woman. It starts in her point of view, where there's a line that says, Iris Milton knew she was the villain of the story. And it just explains how her and the male character Billy met. Yeah, he came into the diner that she served him. It's not super clear. This probably could be argued, but it sounds like he paid for an apartment for her, a car. And so it seems like they meet, he continues to hang out with her. We know from the query letter there's a baby on the way, but it sounds like he bought her an apartment. And that's just a one page kind of, let's call it a first chapter or prologue. Okay, then we move to Melody, who is the wife. And we have a timestamp on that, which is May. And we are getting ready for them to do a photo shoot for the Washington Post to kind of, you know, set their family up for the next stage in the husband's political career. Everybody is there. They're not really getting along. A little bit of arguing, but mostly like nobody wants to be there, especially the son, who we know wants to drop out of college. And there's just kind of the setting up of the family, you know, who is who, setting up the characters. They get the picture done and then they kind of move on. Then the husband goes into his office with one of their young assistants. The wife then looks at her text messages, and she has messages from the same unknown number, the same messages she deleted 3 times. We need to talk. I know what Billy did. And she's kind of like, we have security issues all the time, but like this message keeps getting through. And then she starts to think about the message.
Interesting. Okay. So what was your take on that?
All right. So I really like the sneaky prologue. I think this is the second time I've said that recently. These sneaky prologues are winning me over. I like it because I like the balance. It's like Iris Milton knew she was the villain of the story. She kind of explains a little bit, but it's not in that info dumpy kind of way. It's, you know, he wore an expensive suit. Even she could tell that. His white shirt was still crisp despite the late hour. He didn't belong there in a mostly empty diner in the wrong part of town. He belonged in Georgetown, DuPont, the White House. What great line there, right? Like, I love a long sentence and then like a punchy, like staccato, like Georgetown, DuPont, the White House. I love that. That gets me every time. So I thought that was really well done. It was just very self-aware, and I just really enjoyed that. It really set me up for, and I think the thing that this does really well is the sympathy for the other woman. That does this really, really well, right? Right away, we're introduced to her first, the other woman first, clearly of lesser means. He comes in, you know, she maybe doesn't ask for whatever. He inserts himself upon her and her workplace, comes to visit her at work, right? Like, so we understand he's pursuing her. So the sympathy for the other woman here is incredible. Then we go to Melody, the wife. And this is the part where it's just completely robotic. It's the very much the like Stepford wife thing where she's just going through the motions of like, you know, the banisters are all wiped down and the cleaners came and everything's perfect and the frames or the family pictures are all lined up. You know, just that very classic Stepford-y things, very robotic. We are not on her side, right? Because it, like the prologue with the kind of loose, you know, these two just stumbled into each other's lives makes you think, oh, okay, well, maybe those two are meant to be. Then you meet the wife where it's like, it's all buttoned up. Da-da-da-da-da. She's clearly the one keeping the wheels on the bus in this family, as countless millions of women do across the globe, to just keep a family economy running in terms of like getting everybody where they need to go, the labor that she puts in for creating this public image for the family. But we're not on her side. We're not very sympathetic to her forcing her children and her family into this political picture, which again is for the husband. It makes it really seem like, you know, she is so second fiddle to him, right? Where we know she's clearly trying to do everything behind the scenes to make this ascension possible. So it's all very smart. It's very smart. You know, obviously I'm pointing out things that I could see, but it's done very well. And the only thing that I struggled with a little bit is we don't have a super clear timestamp on all of this. We're supposed to know it's contemporary per the query letter. It was called Contemporary Fiction. I wonder a little bit about the positionality of this within the larger framework of politics and, you know, there's just so much going on in the world. And obviously this is fiction, but this is to imagine to be, you know, in North Carolina, like we know where this is meant to be in the United States. And yet, you know, would they mention things like Clinton? Would they mention things like you know, this power dynamic within the political system. I'm just wondering how self-aware the novel is going to be a little bit, because I found the piece where there's a paragraph that says, once the house cleared out, she felt the emptiness acutely, even though Mark was upstairs and Billy was in an office. Mark is the son. There, but not there. The story of their marriage recently. She knew the part she was expected to play, the part she signed up for all those years ago when Billy's own mother sat her down and told her exactly what she was going to do. Doting mother, dutiful wife, devoted volunteer, but now her kids were grown and out of the house. Her husband spent more time in DC than he did there at home. When he was there, he spent most of his time holed up in his office. They slept in the same bed, but they barely touched. That doesn't feel unique. Unfortunately, it's very sad. It also makes me think about American Wife, right? That was what the Curtis Sittenfeld novel, American Wife, you know which one I'm talking about? Cece's nodding. This makes me think about American Wife, which that novel probably came out 20 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago. It is not a new novel by any means. So it's not necessarily that it felt super dated to me, but I was just wondering how commercial is this going to be in the sense of how much is there going to be commentary on our contemporary political system? The answer could be nothing, but I'm just curious.
I feel like they didn't date it on purpose, because let's be honest, from day to day, current political, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Half the time you can't make this shit up. And if people had tried to write this for TV 10 years ago or 15 years ago,
yeah,
people would have gone, it's totally implausible. So I think this person's staying away from this on purpose because of that. I don't know.
Yeah. And that makes me think of Scandal, like, right, this like slightly romanticized version of what politics was in the Obama era, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't have to go down that deep, deep rabbit hole, but those were some thoughts I had.
I miss that brown suit. Okay, Cece, go.
I loved the sneaky prologue. I agree, it's a sneaky prologue. The first line is a banger. Like, it's so good. And the way the author moves between show and tell is brilliant. The way the author compresses time, zooming in and zooming out, is genius. Like, I need all our Substack supporters. If you subscribe to our Substack and you do not look at this query letter and study this prologue meticulously, you are wasting your money. Just saying. It is absolutely genius. She does so much with such a tight word count. What is the word count, by the way? Wait, hold on. I'm going to look this up. 322 words just for the prologue. I mean, that's so short, right? 322 words. And she goes through their love story and the bomb that dropped in their lives. Of course, she doesn't specify what the bomb is, but we know, you know, and it has opinion. It has a point of view. It has perspective. It is incredibly well-written, like all the applause. Chapter one's not working. The melody chapter's not working. Here's the deal. There's two possibilities for this. Possibility number one, CC problem. CC needs messy. CC needs more depth. CC needs psychological acuity. CC talks about herself in the third person. Fine. If that's it, ignore me. But if your vision for this is something that's a bit more upmarket, something with more teeth, a story that will, you know, have potential for book clubs and start conversations, then I think the melody chapter, I wonder, this is something that happens in dual POV novels. The author wants us to sympathize with one character more, like one character more, imprint on one character more. So she holds back on the other one, you know, thinking, yay. That doesn't work. I need to be fascinated by both POVs. Yes, I will probably root for one more than the other. This is normal. But I need to be fascinated by both. So I think you're holding back on the melody chapter. There are so many instances where there's opportunity for depth, opportunity for messiness, opportunity for curiosity seeds. There are no curiosity seeds. Like the text message, it's not working. I also don't like the fact that she decides, for reasons she cannot explain, to keep the message this time. Like, it feels forced. There's the scene where there's a couple lines. I'm going to read it. The girl glanced up at Billy with a smile and a blush. Mel's lips tightened into a flat line. She was no longer surprised, but it still hurt. If you go deeper in that moment, you could potentially uncover messiness and power dynamics. Like, I want to understand her better and I want to be fascinated by her, and I'm not. So if I had gotten this as a submission, I probably still would have requested the full to see if all the Iris chapters are really, really strong and if the melody chapters get better, because maybe there would be like a vision that I could talk to the author about. But if all of the book were melody, I'd be like not not interested at all, which is a shame because clearly you have the writing chops to do it. So I think a lesson here for anyone listening is you cannot hold back. Like holding back is just not something you can do. Like not in this economy, you know, not in this industry.
I think that's what I was trying to get at with that idea of like, what are we trying to say with this book? Because I agree with you, like it has such upmarket book club potential. And if we don't maximize that with Melody, that's the problem.
Yeah. And it has to be for the both points of view, unless it's a single POV story, right? Unless it's just Iris's, but then that won't work in terms of us seeing the inside of the family. It's a really old novel, but Emily Giffen has a novel called Heart of the Matter, I believe, in which you do get three points of view, the wife, the husband, and the other woman. And it's so messy. And you feel sympathy for everyone. Not so much the man, but probably most people still did. I read this, and yes, I feel for Iris, but it's not that I don't feel, it's not that I am against Melody or not rooting for Melody. I'm not interested in Melody. Like, I want to love both these women and be really mad at this guy. That's what I want. And that's what women all across the world are going to want when they read this book, right? Let's blame the man. But right now, you're just holding back on Melody, and please don't. That's my request.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Carly and CC, for your excellent insights as ever. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another Books with Hooks. If you want to submit, go to the Shit About Writing, go to the Books with Hooks page, and you can submit your work there. Have a good week. Goodbye, everyone. CC Lira is a literary agent at Wendy Sherman Associates. If you'd like to query CC, please refer to the submission guidelines at www.wsherman.com. Carly Waters is a literary agent at PS Literary Agency, but her work on this podcast is not affiliated with the agency, and the views expressed by Carly on this podcast are solely that of her as a podcast co-host and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, policies, or position of PS Literary Agency. Have you been sitting on the fence about signing up for the Beta Reader Matchup, or have you signed up before but haven't yet found your writing soulmates? The next matchup is the last one for the summer, so don't snooze on it. Get matched up with those writing in a similar genre and or time zone so they can critique your work as you critique theirs. Your manuscript doesn't have to be complete to sign up for this 3,000-word evaluation. This particular matchup will be open to registrations from now until the 1st of June, with the matchup emails going out on the 2nd of June. For more information and to register, go to biancamaray.com and go to the Beta Reader matchup page.
What's up, everyone? This is Cece. So I recently grabbed lunch with an acquiring editor from HarperCollins who told me that the number of submissions she's been getting has nearly doubled. And I wasn't surprised at all, because every agent and editor I know has been talking about how the volume of submission keeps increasing. So personally, that is a wonderful thing, because it's more reading for me, but it also means I have more chances of matching with authors. I consider it a privilege to review queries on Books with Hooks, and of course, in my submissions inbox. But at the same time, I talk to writers who tell me that they wish agents would read more than a few pages because, and I quote, "my story gets better in chapter 2." I have to be honest, this kills me. It's like me wanting chocolate chip cookies to have the nutritional value of kale. It's just not realistic. Like it or not, no agent, no acquiring editor is going to stick around to see if a submission gets better. It's not because we're mean, it's because we get dozens and dozens every day. I know it's harsh, but ambitious writers embrace harsh realities. So here it goes. It's your job to make your opening pages irresistible, to make agents crave it, to make agents want to read more. That's why I'm so excited about my upcoming course, Starting It Right: How to Begin Your Story in the Best Place and in the Best Way. I created this course after studying hundreds of books. I've mapped out elements that are present in the beginning of all successful novels and memoirs. And I've designed checklists, actual checklists, that you can use to ensure that your story's beginning is seducing your reader. We'll cover how to write a great first line, different types of beginnings and how you can choose the best one, the best place to start, and the best way to start. Yes, these are totally different things. When it makes sense to add a prologue and when it doesn't, how to frame your inciting incident in an appealing way, how to balance exposition and mystery, how to include context but not weigh it down with too much backstory, and what to do if your story has more than one POV or timeline. Most of all, I'm going to show you how to make readers want to turn to chapter two. Join me for this multi-day course designed to help you break through the noise. You'll leave with a clear, actionable breakdown of exactly what goes into a terrific beginning. If you've already signed up, come prepared to take lots of notes. We're talking hundreds of slides with real-world examples and specific techniques, plus a super fun surprise that I can't wait to share. I hope to see you there.